Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG. And happy Monday to everyone. It's a beautiful sunny day here along Michigan Avenue. We sit in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Temperatures are well above freezing and maybe 53. I don't know if Kim went that far, but 53 by Thursday. You can't argue with that. All right, Randy Schaefer will be here. I don't know, did you hear about the Snapchat New Year's Eve party? I guess the company threw this huge party in L.A., invited thousands of people, and then insisted that they not snap during the party. And so the employees of Snapchat, in order to confirm or conform with their boss's sort of demand, they went to Instagram, which is bad form. So we'll talk to Randy about that. Now, Maria LaMagna coming by in the second half hour from MarketWatch as well. But we usually start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago. You know, Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Steve.
What's up, Steve?
Nothing. You had a great holiday, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Jim? Very good holiday. I'm still wondering. I've still got my Christmas lights up. This is my first holiday as a homeowner, and I'm trying to determine when is the right time to take my Christmas lights down.
How long have you been in the house?
March will be a year.
Okay, so that's your first. So I think that you want to make a statement and show that you're not to be messed with. Right?
Sure.
So I think you leave them up until early March, maybe till the anniversary of your move-in.
I want people to know that we're here.
Yeah. right. And you don't want them to form opinions about you at all, right? They wouldn't do that. And I'm sorry, Dahlke. I was watching the Carolina Panthers Saints game.
Oh, brother. Yeah, that one was tough.
Yep, so the Saints go on and the Panthers go home, but at least they had a playoff game.
Yeah, that's true. The Panthers lost three times to the Saints this year. I was sure the Panthers were going to win because there's no way.
You're going to lose
three times in
right.
a year.
All right, so we're going to talk to Maria LaMagna. She's got a story about meat consumption and how much meat Americans are going to eat next year, or this year, I should say, and it's up. And they say that's a sign of the economy. Actually, tofu products are up as well, which brings us to a story, I think, Catherine, that you wrote for Chicago Inno about tofu tacos.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Impossible Foods, they make vegetarian and vegan meat and dairy products entirely from plants. And, you know, they introduced their Impossible Burger here last fall, but now they have an Impossible Taco, which is a completely vegan meat taco meat. And it's being served at Tallboy Taco in River North.
Have you tried it yet?
I haven't tried it, but Jim has had the Impossible Burger and said it was, you know, a lot like meat. He couldn't tell the difference.
Well, that's the thing about Impossible Foods. And they have a competitor, Beyond Meat, which is another company that's basically doing the same thing.
So we've talked about Beyond Meat, right? But I don't know about Impossible Foods.
Basically, I mean, vegan meat, you know, is not like a new thing, right? Veggie burgers have been around for forever. But what Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat is doing is really kind of making this mimic beef as closely as possible, both in taste and in texture. And I can confirm that the burger, which is entirely plant-based, tasted exactly like a hamburger.
Do you cook it the same way?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how the cooking process works, but I think that's kind of all in the secret sauce of how they're sort of doing this. I mean, Impossible Foods, for one, is a venture-backed company. They've raised over $270 million in funding. Bill Gates is a backer. Google is a backer of theirs. So, a really fast-growing, well-funded startup.
As we do start our week of meat, our day of meat, so because when it comes to the environmental footprint, right, the footprint for a soybean plant is much smaller than it is a hoof of a cow.
Exactly. There's the environmental element to it. There's a health element to it. I mean, if you can replace a hamburger and it tastes exactly the same and it's, you know, 50% healthier for you, I mean, gosh, it's kind of a no-brainer.
All right, so these guys are at a Melman restaurant, or where are Let Us Entertain You, or where are they now?
Yeah, so Tallboy Taco is owned by Let Us Entertain You.
Okay.
Yep, and they're in River North. And, you know, it really seems like Chicagoans like this product. I mean, you know, about a dozen restaurants serve the Impossible Burger now, places like M Burger, Umami Burger, Kuma's Corner. So, you know, Chicagoans want their vegetarian meat.
I would be all, I mean, why not? What's the, you know, my daughter is vegetarian. Sometimes to my great annoyance, because I'm like, you know, it's not going to kill you. They're serving chicken. Have a piece of chicken. But she made this crock pot lasagna with artificial meat in it, and certainly not to the quality of this, and it's fine. Let's go for it.
I think if you were a vegetarian, like, this is such a no-brainer, right? I mean, I think what Impossible Foods is doing, actually, though, is trying to break beyond just the vegetarians.
To get the guys like us.
Who craves a burger weekly, right? So, how are they going to convert me?
By the way, I think soon we might be cooked. The temperature is... So, we've been in the studio now for 15 minutes, and I think the temperature's gone up about 20 degrees.
Yeah, it's a sauna. It feels
right?
good.
It doesn't feel good, and it does feel like a sauna. Howard Tolman announced... he was on the program, I think, last year. and announced last year that he would resign. He thought he'd be out of 1871 by now, right? But it just hasn't happened.
Yeah, this CEO search for 1871 is taking a bit longer than I think everyone
thought. What's behind that, do you think?
So that's a great question. So basically, 1871, the big startup incubator here in Chicago, down at the Merch Mart, really kind of, in many ways, the focal point of the Chicago tech scene. A lot of early-stage entrepreneurs.
Is that fair?
In some ways, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a space that generates a lot of, you know, foreign dignitaries come through there. I mean, Bill Clinton's been in there. I mean, it's a space where if you are from out of town and you want to see what's going on in the Chicago startup scene, you come through 1871. And back in August, Howard Tolman, the CEO there for a couple of years now, said he's going to step down. He expected to be done by the end of 2017. They expected to have a replacement in November, and that timeline has shifted.
Catherine, have you applied yet?
Not yet. Working on it. But, you know, it sounds like they're doing a national search, so this could take a while. I mean, it sounds like they're looking for a pretty big name, someone who probably has a great reputation in the tech atmosphere.
Is this one of those jobs that is... I don't want to say it's a figurehead job because I know Tolman works very hard, but it's sort of a rainmaker thing. Like you need a public face for the.
So I think figurehead is actually a nice way to put it. Not that that's all that they do, but you certainly have to be that, and that's what
ambassador, maybe.
And that's what Howard Tolman did so well. I mean, he had such a great personality. He was at every event. He was a great public speaker. He was an incredible ambassador for 1871, and. It's kind of a difficult shoes to fill because you really need somebody who's going to kind of bring that same level of energy and cachet to the position. So maybe that's what's taken so long. They kind of declined to explain why it's taken so long. They declined to say if they've offered the job to somebody and if someone's turned it down. So we don't really know a lot of the details about the search itself, just that it's taken longer than expected.
One of the things I like about Chicago Inno is they can cover stories like that, but then also you're introduced to these sort of new startup companies. And one that you might not have known there was a need for. And Catherine, you wrote a story about one of those. It's called
Fotis. Kind of like an interesting way to spell and pronounce photos.
Fotis.
That's kind of what it's playing off.
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they might have worked on that a little harder.
Yeah. So they've developed a smartphone app that's like OpenTable for photographers. So it's a way to either find photographers for an event in the future or to find them on demand. So, you know, if you're, suddenly with friends and it's like a big reunion from college and you're like, we need someone to come snap a photo of this.
Oh.
This is kind of that app for that.
Okay, so you're at a bar.
Yeah.
You're at a party and you're like, oh my God, this is so much fun. We should get this documented. You could go to this app and have a photographer come right over.
Yes.
And to me, I mean, this is kind of less of the, quickly, like, take a picture with my camera phone, and it's somewhere in between that and, like, a formal picture, right? Maybe it's like, oh, the family just got together, and you're like, oh, I want to take a quick family photo. Or maybe you're planning a proposal, right, and you want to get someone to kind of capture the moment as
right.
you propose in a public space. So, I mean, I think they're not going to go after the people who are just taking a quick camera picture, but somewhere in between that and a professional photo.
And it's quicker, right? It's digital. So it's all on your phone.
Right. So it's all on your phone. You can find the photographer there. Once they take the photos, you can choose the photos on the app as well.
And on your phone. And then
and download
you just
them,
go.
Yeah. Instantly to your phone, put it on Facebook.
All right. And that is called?
Fautus.
F-A-U-T-U-S.
Yes.
And they're up and running, right?
Yep, up and running.
All right. We'll check that out. Consumer Electronics Show starts officially...
This week.
Tomorrow.
Right. So we will talk about some of the tech companies presenting there. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Catherine Davis and Jim Dalkier in here from Chicago Inno. You should check them out, chicagoinno.com, and subscribe to The Beat, right? Tell me about The Beat, Jim.
That's right. The Beat is a daily email newsletter that we put together. If you want to know everything and anything that's going on in Chicago tech and startup scene, read that. Everything from funding to profiles to big stories, trends analysis, hires. That newsletter, Monday through Friday, has got just about everything.
And you guys do a hit every morning, right, with Grzanich, too.
We do. We do the Inno Minute, which is on the 5:25 hour in the morning. So, yeah, the Inno Minute is a great way to get a quick early morning breakdown on everything going on.
All right, so the Consumer Electronics Show is underway tomorrow. And, you know, I have to say, people who listen every day know this. I said, I think last Thursday, I don't like talking about what everyone else is always talking about. And this is the third day in a row I've done a bit on the consumer. And I will tomorrow because we'll go live down there. But this is the post-holiday, everyone always talks about the Consumer Electronics Show. A number of Chicago companies are going there. Catherine, why is it important? I mean, what's the big deal for a company, a young company, to go and make a point there?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a really good place to show off your product and to get attention, to find investors, to, you know, get money. I mean, it's just a great place for exposure.
I feel like, though, it's one of those, it's like the auto show where you see the prototype cars. A lot of what we see there never really becomes real. Is that correct or incorrect?
Well, there's part of that is true, but I mean, the CES is kind of in an interesting position because, you know, for like the last decade or, you know, before that, I mean, technology was advancing so quickly and so quickly, but now it's like we're kind of at an interesting point in our technology world where things are starting to level out just a little bit. You know, I mean, I think the futuristic, you know, AR, VR is not totally there yet.
Right.
The big thing at CES right now is, you know, the Google Home, the Alexa, kind of like the Home Assistant, but I mean, people are sort of poo-pooing CES just a little bit in recent years because the dramatic reveal of brand new wowing technology isn't quite at the level that it was maybe say 10 years ago. But I mean, it's still an extremely important event. I mean, this is the Super Bowl of
right.
for technology companies. I mean, this is the place when you've got a new product, you are waiting until CES to drop.
Okay,
it.
So let's talk about a few of these. You mentioned Amazon Echo and, you know, the Internet of Things, I guess. And Well Nest is one of these companies that's going to keep my house smart, is that right?
Yeah, so Well Nest, they make like mirrors and clocks.
I messed that up. This is the sleeping company.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so they make mirrors and clocks that are built with therapeutic lights that, you know, have the sunset and sunrise attributes to them. So you can set it like, I want to wake up at 6 a.m., and it'll, you know, turn on this light that makes it easier to wake up.
Right. So, and it wakes you up sort of with a bit of an ease.
Right.
And does it put you to bed that way too?
Yes, it can.
So yeah, it's got a sunrise and sunset feature. So I mean, rather than just quickly turning the lights on to sort of abruptly wake up, it sort of gradually brings the light to you. So it's just sort of making the mornings a little easier.
Okay, that's Well Nest. Have they been around for a while?
No, this is a pretty brand new startup, right? So we're mm-hmm. kind of early days for Well Nest. A lot of these companies, too, are kind of early days.
Yeah.
There's another one in Chicago called Wide Afternoon that's
right.
also kind of early stage right now, founded just last year.
Okay, now wait, I'm going to do this. Actually, I'm gonna argue with myself. Give me a minute, okay?
Yeah.
Because first of all, I'm thinking, who needs this? And as soon as I was about to say that, I'm like, I don't know how long that Thousand Island's been in there.
So that's exactly right. So Wide Afternoon is all about making your refrigerator smarter. So they create sensors that you put on your products in your refrigerator. So you put a clamp sort of around your carrots, and it's got a little sensor on it, and it tells you via cell phone notifications how long the carrots have been in there and when they are going to spoil. So, hey, you should be cooking with your carrots soon because they're about to go bad.
Okay, but is this something really that's going to change our world, or is this...
Well, I can tell you every week we throw out stuff from the refrigerator.
I saw a billboard coming to... because I was actually thinking it in connection with our meat talk, but there's a billboard coming in today, and I think it was like 12% or 15% Americans throw away of their food uneaten every year.
So much of our food is spoiled, and so what Wide Afternoon is trying to do is to remind you, to give you text notifications to let you know, hey, this is in your refrigerator, it's going to go bad, you should use a dish in the near future that incorporates these foods. So it's actually a kind of a smart idea. It just depends on the price point, like how expensive it's going to be to put these sensors in your refrigerator.
Right.
And you know, how useful will it be?
Okay, so go ahead, Catherine.
I was going to say it can be also kind of time consuming because you also have to sync all of the
right.
sensors on an app, and then it notifies you. So it's like a lot of inputting of what's in my
fridge.
You've got
to be into it. You've got to really be into it to do it. Okay, since this is all about me, last night I'm making myself for lunch today. You guys can come up and have a little. a very nice Brussels sprout chicken salad. And my wife came into the kitchen, look, I found these Brussels sprouts. I think they're about to go bad. I was so proud of myself. And she's like, no, I bought those yesterday.
Mm.
So had we had the band on it,
right.
I could have saved that food for another fight.
Yeah, yeah. You used something that was about to go bad before that.
Speaking of that, about to go bad, maybe this segment, I don't know. Oakley is something that's going to make us safer or give us peace of mind?
Yeah, so they make basically personal safety devices, sort of comparable to a police body cam, but for the everyday person. So it has panic buttons, cameras, lighting, impact sensors, a microphone on it, there's an accompanying smartphone app that alerts users if they're approaching a dangerous area or in one.
And so what do you think of this, Jim?
I mean, I think that... There is certainly a market for this. It's probably a niche market. Not everybody's going to want to need a personal body cam around them. But I mean, it's certainly, if you are somebody who is taking safety to the next level, I mean, if you want that extra level of security and safety around you, it's certainly an interesting product and one that really, really brings like safety to a personal level.
Catherine, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. But I've been really kind of more interested in the new iPhone alert where you can like press the lock button three times and it'll call 911. I feel like that's more effective if I was really in a dangerous situation than recording it.
I don't like to, even though I joke, I don't like to put people down who've come up with ideas and are really working on it. But it also, I worry sometimes that this might be selling a little fear, that you might be... Although I guess if you give reinsurance and people want to spend their money on it,
maybe there is more of a business to business element here too. Finding professions other than police, other than law enforcement, that could benefit from an extra layer of safety too. Maybe it's a construction worker working late at night, or somebody who has different.
So
hours.
An employer who might want to take care of his or
exactly,
her workers.
Exactly right.
Okay. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it. Go out and get a suntan.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN on this beautiful Monday afternoon. As Kim said, temperatures in the upper 30s. The sun is shining. What are you having for lunch? Maybe some meat on a stick? More and more of us are. It's going to be a big year for meat in 2018. And who better to tell us about that than Maria LaMagna from MarketWatch.com. Maria, what are you having for lunch? Do you have any meat in your lunch?
I haven't had anything yet, so I'll have to, maybe I will after this. We'll see.
Story you wrote at MarketWatch.com over the weekend, I think, or late last week, has to do with the projected meat consumption, and the numbers are going up, right?
Yes, pretty dramatically, actually. The USDA is predicting that in 2018, we'll be eating 222.2 pounds of meat per capita, which is up pretty significantly even from last year. Last year was 216.9 pounds, so, about a 5-pound difference, which is significant per capita in the year.
And why is that? Is it because we're feeling we got more money in our wallet, or what is it that's leading us to that?
Yeah, that actually is one of the main reasons why, according to the researchers that I've talked about, a lot of people in the past just couldn't afford to buy as much meat, especially people with lower incomes. Prices are going to come down due to increased production, so that's one part that it'll be a little bit cheaper. And also because, yes, consumer confidence is also higher and, wages are coming back a bit and a lot more people are employed, so more people are able to actually afford to put a steak or a burger, what have you, on the table.
Has the research shown that as times get tougher, we tend to eat less? Is meat a big part of our grocery bill? I guess it must be probably the biggest part of our grocery bill.
It is. Meat items are still usually the most expensive thing on the shopping list. Food is also, just in general, one of households' largest expenses besides housing and transportation. So, significant changes in income can really affect what people are able to buy at the store.
It's interesting. You write that 13% of our income goes toward food each year. 7.8% goes to grocery store food, and the rest of it, I guess, to restaurants and things like that. So we're spending almost 8% of what we make every year at the grocery store. So the more we make, the more likely we're to hang out at the meat market.
Yes, exactly. And I was actually a little bit surprised just about how much meat we're all eating, considering there is kind of this other narrative in the media or, among food bloggers and that kind of thing, that people are becoming more embracing of plant-based diets,
right,
and experimenting more, with plant alternatives and maybe cutting back on meat for environmental reasons. So I would have kind of expected the trend to go the opposite way, but I guess that does prove to you that there are a lot of people out there who don't want to embrace some of those trends, even though that seems to be a narrative.
And it's funny you bring that up, because we started the show talking to the folks from Chicago Inno here about Chicago companies or companies investing in Chicago. And one of the stories we talked about was this meatless company, how they're getting their taco meat, meatless taco meat, in some of the better restaurants and grocery stores around the city. So I know there's that movement.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't eat nearly as much meat as I used to. So if we're naturally, if there's that population naturally dropping down, and yet the per capita continues to go up, the people who are increasing must really be increasing.
Exactly. And I think, that kind of proves the point about the economic part, because, you know, people actually are spending more on some of those alternatives than they did in the past. So that is a growing market. That's true. But I think when it really comes down to it, and we see, you know, as I think I mentioned before, that lower income families tend to prioritize meat even more than those with incomes that are higher. So I think what we really are seeing is that economic impact, and it's not just a taste thing. It is partially, but it's also eat better this year, at least according to, you know, that standard of really prioritizing meat on the table.
Yeah, I want to go back to that, because I don't know if you did bring that up or not, but I want to put a little more meat on that, if you will.
Yes.
You write that with those with lower incomes, household incomes, are more likely to say a meal is, quote, not complete without meat, end quote. 31% of families with annual household incomes under $50,000 agreed with that. So a third of the people making less than 50 grand say you got to have meat to have a meal. And then that number goes down, not a lot, but it goes down as the income goes up.
Right, exactly. So I do think that's a trend that's hitting higher income families more. And I think part of that is, you know, some of the researchers that I spoke to said, you know, cooking without meat is still somewhat of a new thing for a lot of American families. You know, it might require some experimentation. It might require some willingness to look at new recipes or learn new techniques. And more traditionally, you know, people do know how to throw a chicken breast or, you know, a burger on the table. So it may just be that our learning curve is a little bit behind and people might not have the motivation to actually learn how to do all of that in a new way. So, you know, it may just be some of these traditions really sticking, you know, taking hold of us and people aren't really willing to get away from that yet.
It's easier. We know what to do with a slab of ground beef. We don't necessarily know what to do with a slab of tofu. But we're spending more on tofu too, right?
Yes, so that is growing.
So do they hold the same in that sort of weird slot that maybe if you expanded the question, a meal is not a meal without meat or / tofu. We still must feel like we need one of those protein sources in a meal.
That's a good question, because protein in and of itself is a huge trend. A lot of newer diets that have really become popular, like paleo and some of those other type of diets, they really prioritize protein. It doesn't have to be meat.
Right.
But I think still when people think protein, they still think of meat. So, yes, like as far as a nutritional standpoint, some of these alternatives, even beans or other foods that naturally have protein in them can certainly satisfy that. I actually don't know all the specifics of paleo, so I don't want to speak out of turn. But, you know, there are obviously plant-based proteins available. So,
come on, Maria. I'm relying on you for my weight loss in the new year. Tell me about paleo.
Exactly. I know. I need to. I haven't done it myself. I know there's very specific rules. I don't want to mess that up. But
I'm sure you've noticed too, though. If you go to, I don't know if it's a taco bar or a pop-up restaurant or a food truck, you know, when you're making selections, you don't see often as often anymore. Pick your meat. You see, choose your protein.
Right.
I mean, so the word meat is kind of almost going away. Not going away, but it's being diminished, at least in that sense.
Yes, that's definitely true. I think people are, at least on menus and in stores, starting to see more of those options pop up. I don't know how often people are actually selecting those options. I mean, I guess the fact that they remain on menus is a pretty good indicator that some people are ordering them. But I think, you know, when it comes to the general population and people who are not as interested in that, maybe they just always don't choose to go that way. I agree. I see that more and more.
You talked about earlier about the supply is up, but if the demand is going to be big this year, I would imagine that would put some supply on the pressure. Tell me where farmers stand with all of this and if they're ready.
Yes, I think they are. I mean, it definitely depends on the product, and sometimes unexpected things happen. You know, we had avian flu a few years ago, and certain things end up happening that, you know, farmers can't necessarily predict. But I do think that, you know, consumer confidence, I'm sure farmers have been aware of for a long time, that impact that has on our ability to buy products. So I think that they are. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year, but I would think that we're ready to embrace the increased demand.
I'm not sure I understand the whole push-pull of it. Maybe Orion will a little bit later, but the idea is, I mean, I'm sure a farmer would like to get a higher price for his slab of beef, but the higher he gets, the fewer he sells, so there's got to be
some
sort of middle ground in there somewhere.
Yes, exactly. No, that is true. I wish I knew a little bit more about the economics of that, but I definitely think you're right.
All right, I want you to go find a lunch somewhere, and I want you to choose your protein. No pressure. You can choose beans if you like, but just go have a nice lunch. Thanks for making ours a little better. Maria LaMagna from MarketWatch.com. Great to talk to you again. I always appreciate it. I love talking to you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1252 on this Monday afternoon. Randy Schaefer is a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, and she comes by on Mondays to talk about what's new in social media. What's new with you, Randy Schaefer?
With me, nothing much. With social media, a few things. It's been a while since I've been in.
It's been a while since we've talked. I hope you had a great holiday season and everything.
I did. I hope you did, too.
Yep, and now we're heading into the season of Monday holidays, right? We've got King Day, we've got President's Day, we've got, of course, Cashmere Palazzo. Pulaski Day, very important here in the state of Illinois.
Memorial Day, or am I looking too far ahead?
That's too far. I'm sorry, that's too far. All right, tell me, let's go back, though, to New Year's Eve. No, that's a different order. What the hell? Let's go back to New Year's Eve and this Snapchat story, because it just cracks me up.
So Snapchat hosted a huge New Year's Eve party, and in typical Snapchat fashion, it was just like over the top and extravagant. And then the coordinators banned guests from posting about the Snapchat event on Snapchat.
So they said they wanted people to unplug, right?
Well, yeah. It was supposed to be an unplugged event, but, you know, you're at this really cool event with, like, Drake and Diplo, and it's like millions of dollars went into this thing, you know. You're going to want to share it. You can't share it on Snapchat, so where are you going to share it?
Instagram,
yes.
So all of these people who work for Snapchat or who are friends of people who work for Snapchat,
yes,
they go to a Snapchat party. Snapchat, and tell me if I'm overstating this, says, hey, we want everyone to just have a really good time and get away from social media for a night.
Yeah, they even took phones and taped over cameras. And so,
but they weren't trying to protect or be secretive, right? They just wanted people
to
relax.
They just wanted an unplugged experience.
Right, and the people couldn't do it.
No, nobody could do it.
So how does Snapchat react to this?
You know, they haven't said like a public statement or anything, I don't think, but there were a few people that were saying if someone was caught, they'd probably get fired.
You think they would get fired?
I don't think they get fired. I guess it depends on their position, you know.
Right. Drake, who was performing, was posting on Instagram.
Right, exactly.
So he's getting paid. No. So he's getting paid to go to this party that where people are unplugging, and he's violating the rule from the stage.
Right.
Okay, I think this says something terrible about us. I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Something about how we're all, like, mind-controlled robots addicted to technology.
That's exactly what it is. Thank you very much. You gave me the words. Okay, let's go to Germany now. That's where I wanted to start. And there's a new law that started with the new year about where social media companies like Facebook or Instagram can face real consequences for allowing hate speech up on their site.
And fake news, yeah. So this is called the quote-unquote Network Enforcement Act, and it went into effect this new year, and it basically says that big social media sites have to take responsibility for the stuff that is shared on their platforms.
I go back and forth on this because on the one hand, I'm always shot down by people who know more like you, because it seems like how can they be held so responsible for everything that goes on? You know, it's being posted by, you know, millions and millions of people, and yet they can figure out what sort of juice I had this morning. So maybe they do know.
Right, and it's really interesting, and this is something that we historically haven't really dealt with until the last decade. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how many other countries, maybe the U.S. in light of recent current events, whether other countries take Germany's lead and kind of start doing the same sort of monitoring on these sites.
I would imagine, though, Europe and probably Germany in particular has a different sort of mindset and history when it comes
to
this
and
stuff.
Here's actually a fun fact, is that Nazi content is not allowed on social media in Germany. Right. So if you are getting sick of it here in the U.S., you can change your home country to Germany and you won't see it anymore.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, this is what a friend told me. So I haven't tried it yet. I'm afraid of accidentally turning my Facebook to German and not getting it back to English. But fun fact.
Something to think about then. So if you make your home country, then you beat the neo-Nazis.
Game the system, yeah.
Okay, I love the story about the guys whose girlfriends are always like, well, you never like my tweets. You never, you know, retweet my tweets, right? And now there's a way around that.
Yes, there is. I like this story. So Lifehacker reports about how a guy made a bot that automatically likes all of his girlfriend's Instagram posts.
So as soon as Sweetie posts something, Honey says, oh, I love this post.
Yep, and you get a Slack notification.
There's harmony then.
There is, yes, and you get a Slack notification. So, you know, she doesn't let her Instagram know that her grandmother died before she lets you know, and you don't accidentally like that her grandmother died or something like that.
Oh, good point. So they let you know about what the post is.
Well, you get a post-like notification on Slack.
I'm kind of surprised. Doesn't this already sort of exist? I mean, I have... just with my email on my iPhone, I have VIP accounts where I get an email, I get a chime.
Yeah, I don't know if you have ever gotten the bot comments on your Instagram that are just random thumbs up and smiley faces, but there are Instagram bots that will go through and automatically like posts and automatically comment on posts. So this isn't really anything new, but the whole like targeting your significant other thing, right, I thought was kind of cute.
So the idea that we've sort of taken away interpersonal communication or direct conversation by social media posts, now we accepted that, and now even the sort of lesser communication we have by liking or not liking each other's posts is being taken away by machines.
Yep, sums up 2018 really well.
All right, it's good. So I'm just going to go back to bed and I'll wake up next year.
Sounds good.
Randy Schaefer, a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I forgot that Randy Schaefer is in the studio again. We have more time. I got a little flustered there by the heat, and I forgot that we have a short spot break.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to think of some new topics real quick.
No, because the other thing I wanted to talk to you, I'm being a baby, but I was trying to send John Williams a text during the show, because it's probably 100 degrees in here, do you think?
Roughly. I was thinking about breaking out my yoga mat and doing some hot yoga.
Okay, all 23 poses? Are there 23 poses?
There's a few more, but I can demonstrate 23 if you'd like.
There's one other story that you did bring in to talk about, and it's the idea that there are these happy social media sites.
Yeah, there is. So this is a cute story. With the doom and gloom, since we're not in Germany, there was a really cool roundup on Forbes about these positive news sites, or I guess not news sites, social media apps and social media sites that really work to connect people in a positive way.
And so it's not all negative that you can actually, what were some of them, like to find lost pets or things like that?
Yeah, one of the ones I liked was called Chummy, and it's kind of like give a favor, take a favor. You know, you help people out, you get tokens, and then when you need something, you can cash in and, you know, have random people come help you out.
And so you just find a Chummy in the neighborhood. That sounds kind of scary to me.
Compared to what we were talking about earlier, I think it's the least scary thing.
And what's the one where you can just send someone randomly a positive thought, but it's got to be someone you know?
Brighton. Yeah, Brighton.
Brighton, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you can wake up and just say, I'm going to send Randy an affirmative tweet.
But it's anonymous, so I'm not really sure how long it's going to take the internet to mess that one up.
Right, and so it's got to be by one of your friends so everyone knows.
Yes.
All right, Randy Schaefer, thank you for coming back for part two. I do appreciate
that. I'll
be
back for part three in 5 minutes.
Don't go far.
All right.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.